I'm up on the tight wire.
I am in Studio B, sitting right next to my good friend, Daniel Chacon.
And I'm sitting across from my good friend, Benjamin Alira Sainz.
And welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire.
We have a very exciting show for you today. We have the winner of this year's Andres Montoya Poetry Prize, Lori Ann Guerrero, who will be talking about her new book, A Tongue in the Mouth of the Dying. It's a lovely collection, and she's actually a lovely woman. We both know her on a personal level. She's a friend of ours, and it'll be nice to have a conversation with her.
It certainly will be. So, you know what I was thinking, Daniel?
Tell me.
I was thinking about Spain.
Spain. Oh, where we're both going to be this summer.
I'm going to be doing some research on a new novel, and you're going to be there in Madrid.
And our paths will only cross for about 2 or 3 days in Madrid.
Do you know who also is going to be there? Rosa Alcalá,
another
faculty member who is actually—that's her ancestry.
She's from Spain. Well, her family's from Spain. Don't tell me you're going to want to have a department meeting, Ben, because I refuse.
No department meeting.
Okay, good.
But you know what's interesting is in my graduate seminar, the last three poets that we have discussed have been Vallejo, Machado, and Neruda, and specifically their poems about the Spanish Civil War. And it's really very interesting because they have really different relationships to Spain. And only Machado was Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Only he was in Spain at that time.
Right.
And these poems that these three poets wrote about the Spanish Civil War, they were all in their mature years.
Right.
In other words, they were already really old men. And it was really interesting for me to realize that, you know, Latin America and Spain have had their difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
Just like we've had our difficulties with England. We broke away from them. We fought independence.
Or just like Chicanos have had their difficulties with Spaniards as well.
And so they've always struggled to break away from a Spanish literary tradition, each country, and create their own literary traditions, as we did.
Right.
Whitman, who wanted to write in a new form and create a new language and a new poetic form because it would be American.
Right.
And William Carlos Williams, who wanted to talk about using an American idiom.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we struggle against the mother country.
Right.
And yet, I think in that moment, no matter where these writers were from, Vallejo wasn't from Spain.
He's from Peru.
He was from Peru. Neruda was from Chile.
Right.
At this moment, it seemed that there was a return in Latin America to the mother country.
Absolutely.
And it's really interesting to say that there can never be a break from the mother country.
Right.
Because for one reason or another, in Spain's moment of crisis, Latin America wept for Spain.
Right. And you know, that's a good point. You know, as Chicanos, you know, I know when I was a Chicano activist at Fresno State, you know, one of the things that you learn how to do is vilify the Spaniards, you know, because the Spaniards were the invaders. They did this, Cortez. But actually, you know, Spain does have a lot to offer for a poet, for a Chicano. It's in a really very vibrant, interesting place. And I'm looking forward to, you know, to going back again.
Yeah, and it's very interesting of the evolution, even in language and linguistic departments or modern languages departments, there was always fights between the Iberianists, the people who taught, you know,
right.
the Spanish tradition, and those who focused in on Latin America, and they always clashed. And you know what? That's gone.
Right.
That is gone. You know, we've evolved.
Yeah. But you know, the Spaniards, though, they talk kind of funny. You know, Borges said that the Spaniards talk Spanish as if they're just learning the language.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
And so when you read Neruda, did you read one of my favorite poems is Explico Algunas Cosas. Is that what you read?
We read one of those, yes.
Oh, that's a beautiful poem. And I love when he says, the blood of children flow in the streets like the blood of children. As if there is no simile, there's no metaphor here. It is just the blood of the children. It's a really beautiful poem.
Yeah. There was this one poem. It's not a part of the series that we read.
Mm-hmm.
That's a line from one of his poems. I steal it and use it as a title for one of my poems. And the poem's entitled, El Río No Sabe Que Se Llama Río.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And I really thought that was really profound because I really have a personal connection to the Rio Grande. And it's really true. The river doesn't know that it is called river because that's the name we gave it.
You know, last time I was in Spain, it was in February, and I remember I was taking this bus. I just got on a bus randomly and just thought it would let it take me anywhere. And I passed by this plaza called San Juan de la Cruz, Plaza de San Juan de la Cruz. And I thought, oh, I got to stop because I love the poetry of San Juan de la Cruz. I love mystic poetry in general, but he's always been one of my favorites. So I stopped, I got off the bus, and I looked around and I thought, you know, maybe I'll run into the ghost of San Juan de la Cruz. And I found a little church with cement steps, really kind of not a very beautiful church, really kind of modern cement and dull looking. But I sat on the church and I wrote a poem about the night because he wrote so well, you know, in that right. Noche Oscura.
Right.
And he's always been, you know, one of my great influences. And I didn't realize until I was there how much of the Spanish literature and the literature by Latin Americans written about Spain had influenced my way of seeing, my aesthetic. It's really a profound.
And sometimes I have to remember that too. So this summer, it will be fun to run into each other in the land of Machado and Lorca.
Oh, I have an idea. When we're there, let's find a place where, like a historical place where Machado hung out or like where the poets hung out. Let's sit there and let's have coffee.
It sounds like a plan to me.
Ha
Stay tuned for another edition of Words on
Lori
the Wire.
Lori Ann Guerrero will be talking about her collection of poems.
Today on our show, we have an up-and-coming Latina poet who recently won the 2012 Andrés Montoya Poetry Prize, selected by Francisco X. Alarcón. The name of her beautiful book is A Tongue in the Mouth of the Dying. Welcome to Words on a Wire, Lorianne.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be talking with y'all today.
And congratulations on your prize-winning book. And I got to say, I love the title, A Tongue in the Mouth of the Dying.
Thank you.
You know what? I think everybody, every writer needs to at least once in their life have a title with the word dead, death, or dying in it. So tell us a little bit about this book. What we're really interested in, Ben and I were talking about this on the way here, what we're really interested in first is the prize itself. Can you tell us a little bit about the whole process of submitting the book and winning the prize and what it meant to you, et cetera, et cetera?
And we're talking about the Andrés Montoya Poetry Prize.
Right. Yeah. So the Andrés Montoya Poetry Prize, it's an honor because of Andrés Montoya and because of his story and because of his legacy. I'm working on a poem right now called He Who Died for My Sins, and it's for him.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. But the prize itself, I found out about years ago and submitted, I want to say twice before I won. And I was a finalist in 2010. And because the deadline for the Andrés Montoya is January the 15th, I always submit it on my grandfather's birthday, which is January the 11th.
Oh, that's nice.
For good luck, you know?
Right.
So, like I said, I was a finalist in 2010, and then, not realizing that it was every other year, I also submitted in 2011. And Francisco Aragon, he's so sweet, sends me an email and saying, you know, I really appreciate you sending your manuscripts, but save it for next year. Okay, we'll do. So it was really exciting. We talked about this last time when we were in NAWP, but just...
Yeah, we actually had that on the show. I don't know if you heard that.
I did. I heard it. Yeah. So it's been really exciting. It's such an honor because of the. It's such an important movement, I think, right now with Latino poets, and just to be counted among these great writers, the other winners who have won. It's exciting. It's exciting, and it's a real honor.
And I don't know if you know this or not, but when Andrés Montoya published his first book. Well, he died before it came out, but it was a prize winner from the Chicano Literary Prize at UC Irvine, which used to be a great prize. And the judge, do you know who the judge for that prize was? Francisco X. Alarcón, the same judge that picked your manuscript.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How long did...
I didn't know that until I got the phone call. And Francisco, when he called me, he told me that. That's one of the things I remember talking about, and him telling me that. And so, yeah, I mean, there's like a legacy. And so to be counted among that, it's dumbfounding. It's shocking, and it's exciting.
And wonderful. Lorianne, how long did it take you to write this book? To put the whole collection together?
I wrote that book over, I would say, 10-plus years.
Wow.
I wrote it, you know, I had the first version before I even moved to Massachusetts in 2005. And so, you know, I worked on it through undergrad, and then I worked on it through graduate school. Because I think I was constantly learning. I was, you know, discovering so much about myself. I was in school with my kids and my husband, and we had moved away to New England, so I was just learning so much and discovering so much about myself and my culture, and being away from my community really helped me see my community. So things were changing for me, and so things were changing for the book as well.
Did any of the early poems survive in that 10-year period?
Yeah, actually, Sundays After Breakfast, A Lesson in Cotton Picking, it's very different from the original version, but that was from years ago, years and years and years ago. I don't know if there are any other ones. Maybe that's the only one I can think of off the top of my head.
Well, when you say that you've been working on it for 10 years, probably when you started working on it, you were just writing poems. And there came a time when you realized, or the book realized maybe before you, that you have a book and the book has a shape. At what point did you start consciously shaping this book? Because it really is a book. It's not just an arbitrary collection of poems. You have a book here. At what point did you realize, okay, I see the shape of the book. I see that a lot of the poems have to do with food. A lot of them have to do with colonization. A lot of them have to do with images of grandpa. At what point?
Well, I mean, honestly, I started writing when I was 8. So I've always been writing a book, you know, and right. I've always had this idea of what does my book look like? What is,
wow.
So even when I was just writing poems, which I totally was just writing poems with no real idea of what a book should be like, it was a book. It had a title, it was a book, and that was how I worked it in my head.
Wow.
But it wasn't until I was toward the end, like in 2008, 2009, between undergrad and graduate school, that I really started seeing the connections, and having read a lot of work and discovering a lot of new work. So I would say about 2008, 2009, and then through graduate school. So between 2009 through to just last year, I would say, where it's really, you know, because I was learning so much about myself and seeing those early poems and the mindset with which I was writing them compared to the mindset that I had when I was revising them and throwing them out and substituting for new poems. So I can't say that I just wrote it in the last 5 years. I say I wrote it. I've been writing it for a long time.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah. You know, Andres Montoya used to tell me that that his goal was to write books, not poems.
Right.
I do that. I write books of poems. You know, you have two experiences in workshops, your MFA mm-hmm. and Canto Mundo. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the difference between those two kinds of experiences of workshops?
When I was in graduate school, I had amazing, amazing teachers. I was studying with Martin Espada and Araceli Skirmay, Patrick Rosal, Jean Valentine, Joan Larkin. But I started grad school and immediately felt othered. So I think I already had my back against the wall when I was going into these workshops, so I don't know if I have a real fair sense of what they were. Some of them were amazing, some of them were horrible, but I was always learning, and there was a sense of, in graduate school, about craft. We're always talking about craft and, you know, line break and which was great, and I needed it, and I was glad I got that education. It felt very technical a lot of the time in some of the workshops. Canto Mundo is the complete opposite.
I want to interrupt you in case our listeners don't know. Canto Mundo is a poetry workshop where they have fellows and teachers come together once a year at the University of Texas at Austin. You can continue. I'm sorry.
So Canto Mundo when I arrived there, I think I started in 2010, experiencing just coming in and meeting the other fellows and our wonderful founders, Carmen Tafoya and Norma Cantu and the others, there's a sense of familia immediately that, like, maybe for the first time ever in my life, I didn't feel the need to have my back against the wall. I think there we're trying to cultivate, and successfully cultivating, a sense of safety and openness. And what we were talking also about craft and these really important things as far as in American poetics now, we were also talking about everything that's sort of underlying all of the other things that we don't get to talk about in MFA programs. Or so it was a sense of openness that made me feel strong. It made me feel strong. It made me feel supported. And it made me feel like I was doing the right thing, where I was not an other. I was not put in a box like previous experiences that I had.
Well, you know, when I was at Canto Mundo, what I was impressed by the writers is that they felt so free to take all kinds of risks. And I really appreciated that because they just did it. They just did it. I don't think anybody that was there was doing... I don't think they felt performance anxiety like you do in other workshops.
Right, exactly, exactly. And that's, you know, when I left there the first time, I couldn't quite wrap my brain around it. I couldn't quite understand why. I mean, is it because we're all Latinos? Really? Is that really the only way? Is that the only reason why we felt that way? We're all from very different places, geographically, you know, spiritually, all different places.
And different kinds of writing.
And different kinds of writing, absolutely. We're all different kinds. But there was no ego there. There was freedom to take risks, like you said, and to have discussions like we didn't get to have any other place, and to experiment with our writing, you know, and I mean, it was amazing. It's amazing.
Did any of those poems in the book come out of there, or your book was already done?
No, actually, these ones were already done when I started there. But I'm working on a new collection, and I think I have three of them that came out of Canto Mundo. And one of them, Ben, is from the workshop that I had with you.
Awesome. Oh, that's awesome.
We're talking to Lori Ann Guerrero, author of A Tongue in the Mouth of the Dying, which is a book of poems that just won the Andres Montoya Poetry Prize. It's in two parts. And before you start the two parts, we have a poem about a literal tongue, preparing the tongue. I remember when I first heard you won this contest, I Googled you, I found that poem, and I read it on Poem of the Week. This was about a year ago. I just love the poem. It's a very detailed poem about preparing a cow's tongue. Why did you put this before part one and part two?
This poem for me represents so much. I think there's so much in it. I think there's sex and violence and so much that after I had the collection together, I pulled this poem out because it didn't seem to fit in the order of the poems that I had. But I knew it belonged in the manuscript. And so I sat for a long time with this poem, and I realized it was more of a meditation for myself in writing the book that it as it exists now, preparation for myself, sort of a meditation, a prayer, so that I could launch it out into the world. But I think that because it does hit so many different aspects of, you know, the world we live in, murder, chopping up of a tongue, fitting it in a pot, sort of making the meal palatable. All of these things were issues that I'm addressing in the book. So I felt like it would be a good introduction or a good preparation for the reader. It was a meditation for myself. I thought it would work in the beginning.
And also, I think what it serves to do for the reader is subvert their expectations immediately, because we begin to think of tongue. I think we're automatically going to think of tongue as language, you know, which it is. And we're going to think of tongue as voice, which it is. We're going to think of tongue as an abstraction, which it is. But here we have a literal tongue.
And it's food.
And you do write a lot about food. I love that poem about the egg. It's so, so detailed, just making eggs. Where do you get this need to write about food? Is it a cultural thing? Is it being a mother? Is it just that you're attracted to the visceral aspect of preparing food?
I think it's all of those things. I love food.
Do you like to cook?
I love to cook. I love to cook. That's something that I love to do. It's an art for me. And then I love to eat it.
Yeah, that's my art.
The cooking and the food in the book is such a part of my own war, I think, that I have with what we feed ourselves and what we feed our children. Right. And so I try to keep these things that are very basic, like cabrito and lengua, what we eat in our own culture. It's such a sacred, sacred meal because it's something that my ancestors have eaten forever and ever and ever and ever. Right. And at the same time, as a mother now in this world, I want to keep feeding my children these same things, but along with, you know, the cabrito and the lengua, you know, the taquitos, we're also living in a world of, you know, bombings and murder. And so the food represents food, but it also represents what do I give to my children? How am I nourishing my children in this world? And so I try to make the connection with what I give them and try to hold it as something that is sacred. You know, while whatever happens outside of this house, when you're in this house, you know, we can share this meal together that our ancestors ate, and hopefully that it empowers them the way it has empowered me.
And just to clarify it with our listeners, when you write about food, it's not just a cultural celebration or a sentimental attachment to the food of our ancestors. It's much more complex than that. You're writing about food, but you're also writing about violence. And just the descriptions that you use to write about food, we realize, yeah, this is about food, but it's also about something else.
I'm going to take this conversation a little bit away from that, but it has to do with violence as well. You grew up in San Antonio, and you've lived there, aside from going to school, all your life.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Was San Antonio, when you were growing up, a violent town?
Yes, and I say yes because I know, but I think my mother kept us pretty sheltered. So we weren't really privy to a lot of what was happening. Violence was everywhere.
And yet when you write about it, it seems to me that you're not just examining it. You're trying to transcend it. Because you're not celebrating it. You're not aestheticizing it. You're just kind of examining it and trying to transcend it through your poetry and get past it. And maybe remind others that you're a witness to it and that we're better than this. In writing those poems, do you think it's helped you become a better person?
Absolutely, yes. I think that when I'm writing any poem, when I'm writing poems, they're documentation of what I'm experiencing, what I'm going through at the time, what I've realized, what I've recognized, what I see. So I'm not trying to romanticize anything, or I'm documenting my own discoveries.
Right.
I'm constantly exploring. And so it's like keeping a journal where it is about trying to transcend. But it's also about trying to recognize where this violence, where all of these kinds of abuse, the internalized racism and classism and sexism, all of that, where does it come from? Why do we have this? Why is this such a part of where we are and who we are? And so in the documenting, I think, of my discoveries, I'm also trying to make connections back through my lineage. And why do I, as a woman, why am I afraid to do certain things? Or why am I so protective of my children? Or, you know, why am I so protective of my community? And it's through the exploration of these things, through reading and through experiencing and my town, and that I'm able to sort of connect the dots and chart out who we are as a people and how we come through this long, long line to who we are right now.
I like to tell people that writing has saved my life. Do you think that's true for you?
Absolutely. I was just saying this the other day to someone. I say that all the time, especially to my students, writing saves my life every single day, every single day. And, you know, when I was reading Audre Lorde, I read her essay, Poetry is Not a Luxury. And, I mean, it's like I was affirmed, like everything that I had been doing was affirmed in this essay. Because for me, poetry is not a luxury. It saves my life every single day. I cannot be without it. And if I didn't have it, I could not be a mother. I could not be anything. I could be nothing because it saves my life every day. And it's not that I'm trying to teach people. I'm not trying to preach. I'm not. I'm just trying to be safe and to grow and to not make the same mistakes that have already been made. I'm trying to learn. I just want to be learning all the time.
Can you choose a poem from this book, this lovely book, A Tongue in the Mouth of the Dying, and share it with us?
Sure.
I would ask you to read the Pinedale poem because I'm from Pinedale, California. And
one marked because if you were going to ask me, I was going to
I was going to ask you about that, but we ran out of time because, you know, I mean, I feel kind of bad because, you know, I'm from Fresno and Pinedale's our little barrio there, right, in North Fresno. But and apparently you have some connections with that. But let's go ahead and pick a poem, something that you really love in this collection.
The one that I'm in love with right now is My Mother Woke a Rooster, but I read it all the time. And I would like to read the one about the egg, which I never...
Oh, I love that poem.
Okay, yeah, read that one. Read that one.
Read
that one.
Read that one. Yes,
I never read this poem, so yeah, thank you. So I'm going to read this one. It's called When I Made Eggs This Morning. I broke them, watched them plop, gooey discharge of egg into a glass bowl, sprinkled them with salt sucked from the sea, pepper cracked with a twist, tiny black skulls flaked and dusted, bone meal. I beat them, whipped them like a monster until the line between yolk and albumen was no longer visible. I seared them in a hot pan, toasted the skins, served them to my children. We ate. I thought of you, rooster man, the squawking bird mother you shot by the frying pan.
That was Lorianne Guerrero reading from A Tongue in the Mouth of the Dying.
And that was lovely.
Thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire, Lorianne.
Thank you.
We'd like to thank our guest, Lorianne Guerrero, for appearing on our show. It's a lovely book.
And we'd like to thank you, our listening audience. Join us again next week for another edition on Words on a Wire. This is Benjamin Alida Sainz.
And this is Daniel Chacon. And don't forget that every book you read
is already saving your life.
I'm up on a tight wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a circus game with you and me. I'm up on a tightrope. One side's hate and one is hope. But the top half